Well, I'm just very, very grateful for all the good reminders I had these days about attachment through eyes, ears, tongue, body, mind door, and that Loba always can find an object, and that we are attached to people, which is very common to all. And it is very helpful to know more about attachment as only a Dhamma, because we often take it for my attachment. I am so attached. But little by little, there can be more understanding that it is only a Dhamma which is conditioned by many different factors. It was accumulated and accumulated inclination during many lives. We don't know our former lives, but we know that it conditions attachment now. And in understanding this little by little, we can have more understanding of attachment now when it arises as just a Dhamma. It should be understood as a reality which is right now, because that is the way to have more understanding of it.
Can you do?
Nobody can do, no. But understanding can be developed. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Leave it to understanding. It works much better than anyone else.
Because that is much better than someone. So if there's a lot of attachment or little attachment, or
yes,
it, as you say, it just depends on accumulations at that very moment. So yeah, nothing to be done at all. It's no, just Dhamma, passing Dhamma that doesn't last for an instant. Nothing to be concerned or upset about. So very common, just common attachment in daily life.
Yes.
And when there's, when understanding grows, as it grows, it will understand it more and more clearly for what it is. As you say, the problem is when we take it for my attachment that is so special or
special, yeah,
so disturbing, because we know it brings so much grief. So understanding it more and more as a Dhamma,
it's a Dhamma,
but the only way, and not just attachment, any reality.
Yeah. But when we, or when people here leave it to understanding, they may think be lazy, and they get it the wrong way, like anatta as an excuse. We hear that very often.
And that is the function of Lopa. Never leave.
Yeah.
Never get away. It's yeah, there all the time.
Yeah.
After seeing, after hearing, thinking it's like that.
Yeah.
It seems like you'd like to have less and less attachment.
I would like to have less.
See, it's clear now that it's you.
Attachment, even now.
Now, even now, yeah.
This is not so much a question as an example. Last evening I saw something that shocked me in town, and there were a lot of good reminders in it for me. After dinner we were walking near the square, I guess, in town, and there were a number of people from the various hill, you know, ethnic minorities wandering, and there were two children, probably about 7 or 8 years old, and each child had a little one on his back, you know, held on with blankets and things. And I looked, and one of the children, being held by a blanket, quite a few near his head, could not have been more than 1 or 2 months old. I was absolutely shocked, and the poor little baby was crying. And I found myself pulled into the story, a big, long story. This poor, you know, these poor children out there at night with, you know, the 7 or 8 year old with a crying baby on his back. The baby just looked so miserable. And I was just instantly drawn in with, you know, all of the emotions, that the sadness and the feeling sorry for. And then I realized, wait a minute. There's such a big, long story out of something I found so shocking.
But that can be you in any life to come.
Yes.
Or in the previous life, who knows?
Yes, yes, that's very true. I mean, I was shocked, you know, it was, you know, I mean, eventually I remembered conditions and attachments and stories, etc. But it was sort of an example of being shocked and just how quickly, you know, the old stories and the old patterns come in.
Only Panya can keep you from having such impression.
Sometimes things are shocking because of our own expectations or usual standards. It may not be shocking by the standards of another group of people, for example. It's a sort of a judgment, in a way.
Yep. And it's a conceit.
It can be all these things. It helps to appreciate that it's one's own expectations.
Yes.
Which we think, of course, are rational and appropriate, but they're not always.
Well, that's true, I think, for the family that was, you know, involved, the two children, the baby and the other, I'm afraid it was probably all in a day's work.
I was going to say the baby is earning money for the family, starting from 1 or 2 months of age.
Right. And all I could think of is this baby needs to be home in bed with somebody looking after it.
And we have, like you say, sucked into this long, long, long story, and thinking about the story seems to justify the shock. So one might even think it's right to be outraged or shocked, but all the disturbance and shocking is just one's own kalesa at that very moment. Actually, there's no baby and there's no child of 7 or 8 at that moment. It's just citta, chetasika and rupa. And at the moment of being so disturbed, there's no metta, no kindness, no genuine concern for them. It's just one's own feeling that one doesn't like, that one's so disturbed by.
That became very apparent.
So it doesn't help. But when there's more understanding, it's clear that at moments of shock, that is the issue, that is the problem. And it's the opposite of metta at that moment.
Very true. That's...
It may have been a situation designed to have that reaction.
I think it probably was. It was nonetheless shocking. I saw someone that looked a little more adult lurking in the background. And there were lots of stories going with it, you can imagine. But it was, I think you've all hit the point. And especially no metta when there's that kind of sadness and feeling sorry for. And
as long as all of us live in this world, the world of conventional world, it has to be like this, no matter when. So in order to have less and know how to get away from the conventional world and of sadness and so forth, the only way one knows that it is right understanding. And right understanding cannot arise just by not hearing again and again about whatever appears. So I think that no matter the beginning or in the middle or in the end, the word of truth about what is now happening condition the understanding of no self. Otherwise there must be the world and people and sadness never get away at all.
Also, when we learn and hear and understand about karma, this is the condition for equanimity, because sometimes nothing that we can do, if we can help and we would like to, with metta, we help, but sometimes it's not possible to help or change, and that's the time for equanimity, because what is occurring, just like the seeing now as a result of karma, so it is for that child or baby.
Yeah, it was as I was watching this, those kinds of reminders came up. But you're right, there are sometimes situations where you want very badly to do something, but equanimity is really the best, because there are situations where you can't do anything.
Is there anything you
need? Actually, I'm quite new for this kind of dharma, but can I use my experience? Actually, right now I'm an investor in the stock market, and for this year I made a lot of money, and I feel like I am happy and not happy, because I saw my lopa every day, and every day I think I should slow down my work and do other things. But for me, I'm kind of very working woman, and I don't want to just like stay home and listen to the dharma and do nothing. I want to work every day, and I want to read everything every day, and I feel like I'm so tired, but in the same time, I enjoy to do that, and I'm so proud of myself that I can make my family happy. But I feel that it's not enough. I feel like one day I want to slow down and want to see the things quietly, but after 5 minutes, I think that, okay, I have to work, and then I start to listen to my work again. So what should I do for myself, and then if I want to study dharma, and go like I want to study dharma every day, I want to go like go to school for dharma every day, what should I do?
Do you know what dharma is?
It's real. So it's the truth.
It's the real and it's the truth. Is that dharma right now?
Yes.
So what is dharma right now?
I can hear, I can see, and I think.
So you say, I can hear. What is dharma?
Here.
Here is dharma. And it's I dharma?
No.
No. So you would like to understand better about dharma in order to have less and less attachment to the wrong understanding which takes everything for I of things. Is it easy?
No.
Not easy at all. So we better study just one word at a time. Otherwise, we cannot have precise understanding of what that word represents. For example, dhamma. Is dhamma sound?
Dhamma sound?
Why?
Don't know.
But you can say that sound is real, but you don't know why.
Yeah, because I can hear sound.
That is your thinking. But now we just talk about just one word, just one at a time. And when the question is about whether the sound is real, is dhamma, you said yes. Why? What conditioned you to know or to think that sound is real?
Oh, because I can hear.
You mean that without hearing, the sound cannot appear?
The sound cannot appear.
So sound is not hearing.
Oh, yes.
So there is no I who hear?
Yes.
There are sound at moment of hearing, sound and hearing at this moment of hearing. Can there be hearing without sound?
No.
Can there be sound without hearing?
No.
Really? This is the way to think, that even that which is not experienced, whenever there are conditions for anything to arise, it arises.
Uh-huh.
The sound in the jungle, on the mountain, whatever arises meets conditions for its arising, no matter it's heard or not. But the world cannot appear without the experiencing, the reality which can experience. For example, who will know that there is sound if there is no hearing right now? See? So we learn to understand Dhamma as not self, as not anyone. It cannot belong to anyone because it's conditioned to arise and falls away instantly. So what you cling to is that which is gone completely. But since there is not just only reality arising, whenever there are conditions, realities keep on arising. Right now, there is not just sound, there's visible object, and there's so many things. They are all dhammas, conditioned. But without understanding the condition, there must be the idea of, I can make it, I can do it. Like the question, what can I do? What shall I do? But actually, can you make anything arise?
No.
So each reality which appears must have conditions for its arising. Even thinking to go to the Dhamma school, to listen to Dhamma every day, but it's now which is conditioned to see, to hear, and then gone completely. It is like this from birth to death.
Yes.
And when you're making some investments, is there hearing?
Actually, it's combination, hearing, thinking, and a lot of conditions.
Just like now, there's hearing and there is sound that is heard, and thinking about the work, thinking of what you're going to do, and there's seeing and visible object, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, attachment, just like now.
Yes.
So actually, the meaning of study Dhamma, means at this very moment. So seeing arises now, it sees visible object. So it's not a matter of stopping one's activity or changing one's work, but there can be understanding slipping in any time at all.
Oh, right.
Usually in a day, most of the time after seeing or hearing, it's attachment and ignorance that slips in. But by studying more at this moment, understanding can slip in. So if one has an idea that one should stop or change one's normal activity, like give up one's work to study Dhamma, this is not the right understanding. Like we both worked very hard all our working life, just recently retired. Jonathan only retired a month or two ago after over 70, but no idea any time that it hinders the study of Dhamma, because we understand that study of Dhamma any time at all. And of course there's attachment in your work, but even in your home life there is attachment. Anywhere there is attachment. So it's not a matter of thinking it's better if you give up your job and stay at home. This is just an idea. And it's no should or shouldn't or this way or this way, because these are just conventional situations. But the reality, seeing now, the hearing now, is just the same. Whether here or in Bangkok, at work or at home, you're seeing, you're hearing, like, dislike, attachment. So understanding more about the realities that Ajahn was talking about is the way that one thinks less about the situation or the long story about this or that problem, because one knows actually at any moment there is just Chitta, Chaitasika, and Rupa.
Okay.
Just the same. So if you enjoy your work, it's fine. You carry on, you can do so many helpful things with the money you earn. No problem, no hindrance to the study of Dharma. The only hindrance to the study of Dharma is wrong understanding.
Oh, thank you. Now I give my money to the monk that ill, and some temple that need water or temple, yeah, or jedi. I'll give my donation to that society. And if when I see my lopa, that mean I study Dhamma, right? On right that time.
The main thing is to understand that each reality arises because of conditions and falls away instantly. It's not my lobha, my seeing, my visible object. It's just a Dhamma. This is the meaning of Dhamma, just a reality. So lobha arises. It's not Nina's lobha or your lobha. It's just a Dhamma. It arises and falls away instantly.
Okay.
So this is the most precious aspect of the teachings to understand. Better to work full time and be really, really busy with a little understanding than have all the free time reading Dhamma books but no understanding of Dhamma as anatta.
All right.
You talked about understanding your lobha when making a donation, but we don't talk about different situations because there can be lobha any time. There can be lobha now when one is seeing, for example, one may be attached to the visible object even though we're not really aware. It's not strong lobha, but it's there all the time. So we don't have to think of different situations because then it seems that we think there cannot be any awareness now or in other situations. We talk about understanding any Dhamma, not just lobha, but any Dhamma at any time. Because if there's no understanding of a Dhammas now, there can't be understanding of lobha in a particular situation.
I see.
Just knowing that one has lobha is not the same as awareness or understanding of the reality of lobha. Anyone can know they have lobha. They don't need to hear the Buddha's teaching to know that, right?
Right.
Just like anyone can know they're angry, anyone can know they're jealous or they're happy or whatever.
Yeah,
nothing
right.
special about that. So awareness of Dhammas is something quite different from knowing that I have lobha.
Uh-huh.
So my situation is I quit the job 2 years ago because I wanted to study, spend more time on understanding, to get more understanding on Dhamma. And Ajahn said that's even worse if for quitting a job to learn to have more understanding. It's actually conditioned by lobha, right? And it's even worse than if I want to go back to work for money now. Okay, that's my situation. But I do have a question though. Now if I am returning to job market, I may face some choices, right? Even though it's all conditioned, but it seems there are choices now because I can choose the similar job before, I can apply for that, or I can do something like a small business, but I have maybe not as much money, but I have more time. I have more time. I can find more time to consider Buddha's teaching. So even though it's all conditioned, but there are still some choices there. So now it's almost, I'm not sure which direction I should cultivate, or let's not I to cultivate, but.
It seems there are choices because it seems that there is I, and it seems that I can decide go this way or that way. But actually, when one appreciates more and more that at this moment there is only Chitta-seeker and Rupa, only seeing, hearing, or thinking, for example, at this moment, and each one, each reality is conditioned, then it is clear that no one there, no one to make any choice, no dilemma at all. It's only when we think of this long story about going back to work and I can do this job or that job, and we think conventionally, that it seems there is a choice and a dilemma. Actually, it's all about me and how I can choose. But even that moment of thinking now, I can make a choice. Even that moment of thinking is conditioned. Next moment, thinking about something quite different. And then that thinking is conditioned also. So any reality at any moment arises by conditions. So this is why we study more about Paramatta Dhammas, about the realities, to really understand more and more clearly no one there at all. So when they're thinking about what shall I do, what choice shall I make, at that moment there can be understanding right then and there that it's just thinking which is conditioned at that instant.
Yes, I understand many, especially many thinking are conditioned by lobha and moha too. But still, if my prior boss asked me, do you want to come back for this job now? And if I say yes, and I know I'm pretty much going back for money, and that's, I know it's conditioned by, it's akusala, so, and I would make, like, struggling, should I take it or should I see what happens? It's still conditioned, so.
Is there a right answer to that question?
Is there a right answer?
Is there a right decision to be made?
Right in terms with understanding, or now with understanding, right?
Well, is in the terms of the Dhamma,
right?
Does it matter whether you go back to work or not, or whether you work in this way or that way?
Well, principle-wise, it is probably not. I'm not 100% confident yet, because you mentioned about quiet, right? So, because all the akusala are enemy of banya. So if I am in a situation that easier to have more akusala, then there's more enemy for banya, right? There's more enemy for understanding.
Just forget about Dhamma, because we always forget. Right? Just forget about Dhamma, because we always forget about Dhamma. Think about what will you do with the job? Just you, what will you do? What I'm going to do? If it's my situation, I will think, what will I do naturally? No need to find out whether it disagrees with Dhamma or not at all. But leave it. Forget it. But forget about Dhamma. Just you. What would you do?
At work.
Okay, that's it. See? Because mm-hmm. you see that even such thinking is conditioned. But no one knows that it's Dhamma, not you. We think that I make decision. I made decision. But actually, that thought is conditioned.
Right.
So no need to think about whether it disagrees with Dhamma, should I do this or should I do that, because every moment now is arisen because of conditions, nothing else. Closing one's eyes by conditions, stretching out is condition. Mm-hmm. Nothing can arise without conditions at all. So forget about whether it agrees with Dhamma or not. Just what would you do? And then by then you know that it's done or made by conditions, not anyone at all. So what would you do?
Go to work?
Mm-hmm. So that is conditioned.
Yeah. Right.
No more thinking about it because it's made already.
And if one has a long story about, oh, if I say yes to the boss, it'll be motivated by a kusala and this and this and this. Just a long, long story, thinking at this moment. How do we know? Do we know the next moment now whether there will be attachment or understanding? We don't know because it will depend on conditions. Who knows at that moment? Like, if we have the idea that it's something wrong to make money because it means there must be more attachment. This is just a long thinking. It's not understanding reality at this moment at all. So it's like trying to avoid a kusala instead of understanding what's conditioned at this very moment or that very moment.
That, because Buddha say, we talk about avoid evil and cultivate good, and Buddha said that can be done, right?
The self or the non-self?
The sound or
the self?
Do,
yeah.
Self or non-self?
Self. Non-self, right.
So, even right now, thinking about this or that, it's non-self. Work or not work, it's non-self.
Right, but because the thinking is conditioned, therefore it's conditioned the future again.
Because the idea of the self is so strong that no matter what one is thinking about, it's about just one self to have less or more attachment. But attachment is attachment. No matter you think that I would like to have less, but it's there. See? Right understanding knows that. If there is no attachment now, there will be attachment then. If it's not this moment of attachment of this, it is attachment of other all the time, no matter work or not work.
Right. But the situation that has better opportunity to consider...
That is thinking.
That is thinking.
Conditioned again. Mm-hmm. So just live like usual and understand that self, the reality is not self. Because we cannot force to have the life goes on through or by Dhamma all the time, kusala all the time, no akusala at all. But whatever is there is conditioned. This is a way to eradicate the strong attachment to the idea of self, which is trying not to have this, not to have that.
For example, if I take a job in December, then I may not be able to attend the February one. I was thinking about that. Right, and then...
Excuse me. So you know what you think and what you make decision, all by conditions. To work or to go, to attend a session, Dhamma discussion. It's all conditioned, no matter this or that. Not you. But you think that you would lose, you would gain, something like that. But actually, that's not the idea. That's not right understanding. It's still the idea of self.
It's not a right understanding at that moment. But if the choice is to go to February
also,
one, that cultivate more understanding.
Also conditioned.
Right, it's conditioned.
Depending on decision too.
Job, it's not certain you'll be able to go in February anyway.
Yeah, I know, but
because anything can happen.
But if I take a job,
and if
I
you
know
go,
it's the last chance to go.
But if you understand about developing awareness of present moment reality, then in the long run, we can say that there will be progress in the Dhamma in life. If you gear your life around attending special sessions in order to have more understanding, for example, then it's not necessarily developing that understanding because of the idea of self.
Right.
That's why Ajahn says, forget about the Dhamma. Because it's not that one should make one's life decisions based around what might be best for understanding. That's the wrong understanding.
So you mean if we make the decision and that's it, the present, and then we don't have to aware for the future, because normal life we plan for everything, because we avoid that the bad thing happened, and we have some kind of fear for the future that we try to plan everything well. But if something is happened without the condition that we already made decision, it mean nothing, and the condition will let us go, right?
When we talk about things happening, whether good or bad, we're talking about result, right? Result of past deeds.
Right.
So decision today doesn't mean no bad things happen. Decision today doesn't mean less bad things will happen than if decision was the other way. That's just an illusion we have of controlling our life in order to get the best outcomes. But the reality is that the so-called outcomes, the things that happen, are dependent on conditions that are not under our control. We can just consider the best we can, make decisions, and the outcome will happen in due course, good or bad. But not because of the decision, because of the past deeds.
All right.
And maybe you can negotiate with your boss, like someone else may like more or higher salary. You can say, well, I don't need the extra salary, but what I need is this particular time off, or I need to be able to work remotely during that period. Who knows? Sometimes things work out in different ways. I'm also in charge of our investments, but I don't see any problem with it. I know that there is lobha, but this is common, ordinary daily life, and I need to take care of our future because I don't have a pension. But this is ordinary household life, and one has responsibility for other people. I try to take care of my mother, make sure everything is all right. And I don't see it as like a dirty word to try to earn more money, or I don't think, oh, if I earn more money, there will be more attachment. I don't think like that at all, because I know even now, even when I go to eat breakfast, even when I wake up in the morning, there is attachment. This is what the Buddha taught about. But it's just reality. It's not my attachment, or it's not one situation to try and avoid, because that is like trying to have less akusala game. That is much more serious kind of attachment, because behind it is an idea of practice again, avoid this situation or that situation, instead of just understand what is conditioned at this very moment according to one's accumulations.
I see. But when the attachment that we you don't want is to come, then it's happened. Maybe it's happened because of the condition. And so what are you going to do?
Again. It's like I had a surgery recently, and when I found out I was having the surgery, we cancelled the trip to Thailand we had scheduled with Ajahn, and we were not sure if we can come to Vietnam. But these are just different dharmas, so natural, just daily life. Whatever plan or arrangement happens, anything can occur. One friend who planned to come broke her arm, one Thai friend. So we never know by conditions, but it doesn't matter, because it's still dharma, it's still reality. And the confidence that grows, know that actually, whether at home or here, at work or not at work, it's still seeing, it's still hearing, it's still lobha, it's still just common, ordinary realities. The important thing is understand each reality arises by conditions, not anyone's, not my choice, my decision. Just thinking that is anatta.
And when we think of decisions, decision is not a reality. Decision is something we think about. There are many realities involved in what you call I make a decision, and one of those realities is wrong view, that I can change the course by thinking one way or another. So it's often a self wanting to be in control that causes the difficulty with decisions.
Because that's why thinking what to think about is so important, because it conditions so many things. That's why thinking about Buddha's teaching, considering that's the most precious. For example, we talk about making money should not feel guilty, but to me that could be dangerous, right? Because what money can do, money can make pleasant experience in terms of material world. That's what money can do.
Okay, what did the Buddha say about lay people making money?
I do not know.
Oh yes, money can do. Money can give away things for good people and many, many good things in life.
Right.
In one sutta, the Buddha went through the duties of a lay person. Duty of husband toward wife toward husband, parent to child to parent, and so forth. And one of the duties of a husband is to support the family, to look after the wealth that's been earned, not to dissipate it, to use some for his business and some for giving away, things like that. There's no suggestion that pursuing a livelihood, there's anything wrong with it at all. But of course, all with kusala.
Right, but it still could be dangerous, right? The mana or the...
What is dangerous are the defilements, not the wealth or the livelihood.
But didn't Buddha also say it could be something like the arrow with a flower in front? You may think it's flower, but it's actually an arrow.
It's possible to take things wrongly and to use wealth wrongly too. But we are talking about people who are studying the Dhamma and who are sensible in the way they use any wealth that is gained.
Fearing how you might use wealth is fear, and not understanding that how wealth will be used will be up to conditions. Again, it's something you cannot control. But I agree completely with what Jonathan has said. There is an opportunity, if there is wealth, there is an opportunity, depending on conditions, to use it well. Use it for good purposes, for helping people. And again, depending on jitta, depending on accumulations, there's an opportunity to use it foolishly. But you don't know. It's like trying to control. I won't make money because I might use it foolishly. That's all total speculation. And there's no you who's going to make that decision. And there's no you who's going to spend it. It's all going to be about conditions and accumulations being some of that.
Well, I was just going to say, yes, back to the moment of reality, that's probably the best way to go. You were going to say something?
I just want to say that I understand that my life living with fear, because I try to plan everything well, if I do understand more about Dhamma, and I know that the present I can make decision, but further future I cannot make decision and I cannot do anything. What the result gonna happen? And for now I do understand that if I understand about the present and the Dhamma more, I will less fear. Is that true?
Can you understand and can you make decisions now?
No.
Why not?
because the thing happened is happened.
And is there any you who can do anything even at this moment?
No.
Not at all. So even when it seems right now that I make decision or I understand, actually it's just thinking even now because of conditions. If there's no condition now to think like that, it won't happen. If you can you decide what will be seen now?
No.
No, because it happens. Seeing arises so quickly, sees visible object, falls away instantly. Can you decide what to hear now?
No.
No. No one decided they want to hear the sound of coffee or whatever it is, but by conditions, hearing, heard that sound. Yeah. Did anyone decide they wanted to hear the sound of the creaky floorboards? No, no one thought about it beforehand, just conditions to hear at that moment. So coming closer and closer to reality at this moment is the way to understand that I cannot do anything, I cannot understand, I cannot make decision. There are just different realities. If understanding arises, good. If it doesn't, it's also by conditions. No one can make it happen. No one can stop attachments. No one can make attachment happen.
Yeah.
You'd like to understand Dhamma?
Yes.
You'd like to understand Dhamma? What is fear?
What is fear?
What is fear? Everywhere should be understood.
All right.
Because all are Dhammas, and this is the way to study and to understand Dhamma. Whatever you think, whatever is there, is Dhamma. So when fear is there, what is fear?
Yeah, that actually the fear is something that I think about it, but it's not there.
So can you take Dhamma for I or me?
No.
So what is fear? When fear is there?
It's just the feeling that happened to the body, but there is no fear.
It's a reality, unpleasant situation.
Mm-hmm.
And there can be seeing, hearing, or smelling, tasting, whatever that is not pleasant, depending on how much pleasant it is. Are you afraid of taking very hot chili? So that's a kind of fear, not self. In order to really understand reality, come back to the nature of reality, of each reality that we haven't used to think or to understand.
So
like fear. What is it?
Fear is come by experience, right?
We have to know what fear is. Is it real?
It's like when you said, if I taste the hot chili and it's hot, so I fear that it's hot. So I want to try
so
on it.
So fear is so hot.
Yeah.
Is fear you?
No.
So fear is fear.
All right. So I just think about it. It's just
no
fear.
When we study Dhamma, we learn about realities, which is which, what is what, not I.
All right.
It's the term lobha, right?
Yes.
What is lobha?
Actually, there is no lobha.
Actually, there is lobha.
There is lobha.
Do you like things? Do you like things?
Yes.
Do you sometimes want something?
Yes.
It's lobha.
Uh-huh.
Attachment. Like, wanting. That sort of thing, right? Lobha. We call it lobha. And the opposite of that is dislike. Right? Not wanting. Taste something that has a bad taste. We dislike it, right?
Yes.
So there are two realities, the bad taste and the dislike. and the third reality, the unpleasant feeling. And the dislike we call dosa. You've heard of dosa?
Tosa.
Dosa.
Tosa,
right.
Yeah.
Opposite of loba.
Yes.
Right. And fear is another kind of dosa. Right? We think about yes. something and we don't want it to happen. We're afraid.
Yes.
Dosa.
Okay.
Realities. All of these are realities. We are thinking about is not real. Right? We are thinking about hot chili. At that moment, the thought of hot chili is not real. But the dosa is real. Right? We're afraid. We see some hot chili. I don't want it. The fear is real, but the thought of the idea of hot chili is not real.
So whether it's fear about too much money or too little money or being with too many people and being on one's own or whatever it is, hot chilies or no hot chilies, it's just thinking and fear. So just a kind of aversion at that moment with unpleasant feeling. Yeah. So it's real, but it falls away instantly, not anyone who's afraid.
I see. And when we see the feeling that we don't like, and just to know that we have the feeling that we don't like happened, right?
So if there is thinking with fear now, at that moment, there is unpleasant feeling, not my feeling at all. Just unpleasant feeling falls away instantly. The opposite of when there is thinking with attachment. When there's thinking with attachment, usually it's pleasant feeling,
yeah,
but also not my feeling falls away instantly.
Okay.
So thinking is real, fear is real, attachment is real, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling is real. But the long story about, oh, if I make too much money, if I don't make enough money, if I eat chilies, if I don't, or what will happen to me later, these are just ideas, not real.
Do you have loba for ice cream?
Yes.
And you have loba for making money?
Yes.
And any difference between the loba for making money and the loba for ice cream?
Well, actually, it's not different.
Yes. Same characteristic.
Yes.
Yes, just loba.
Just loba. Mm.
All loba is unwholesome dhamma, akusala dhamma, right? It doesn't matter whether it's loba for our children or loba for our parents or loba for making money. It's just loba. Yes.
And the cause of that loba, is it the money or what the boss said or the working hours or the success, or what is the cause of the loba?
If I want to be a good girl, so it's loba.
Yes.
Because good girl is
yes.
mean nothing.
Wanting, clinging to oneself.
Clinging to oneself.
If one wants to be the one who is not greedy about money, more loba.
All right.
And so the cause of loba is not money or food or people. The cause of loba is the habit, the accumulation of loba. So when there is the habit or the accumulation, no matter rich or poor, here or there, loba will arise for sure, because there is that habit, that tendency.
So, Achan, the fear is a kind of unpleasant feeling, is dosa, but maybe shy or ashamed is another kind of dosa. there must be difference between these two, but in reality, just only dosa.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I feel something just not right here, because in even we feel the difference between the two, but why just only dosa?
We don't have to name or call anything at all. It can be frightening or ugly or whatever, but at that moment it's a reality which is not pleasant, which is not attachment.
But this reality is different from the other reality.
Mm-hmm.
There must be the characteristic of that mm-hmm. is different.
Yeah.
Different.
It harms and it hurts. At that moment, one doesn't feel happy, pleasant at all. At moment of fear, at moment of shy, whatever.
I guess dance, is that because it's all those are rooted, but still the Vedana accompanied is different degree. So that's why you feel shy and or fear. You feel they are different. Is that because the Vedana, that even though they are all rooted, both rooted in dosa?
Why is the visible object seen now different from the visible object seen now? Why is each sound experienced different?
Because they have different characteristics.
Each sound is sound, but at each moment it is conditioned to be the way it is in different ways. The accompanying rupas are different, so even though each one is sound, it's never the same. And the same with mental phenomena. Each moment of dosa, aversion, is different, never the same. So no matter we call it fear or shyness or anger, there are different strengths and different qualities at each moment, and it's affected by the other mental factors that arise with it, and the thinking at that moment, and the sanya, the memory at that moment. So it's never the same.
So what is the characteristic of dosa?
As Ajahn said, the characteristic of dosa is not liking of being disturbed or harming at that moment. Mm-hmm. And it always arises with unpleasant feeling. So no matter it's embarrassment or fear or annoyance or anger, it always harms or hurts at that moment, and it always arises with unpleasant feeling. And it doesn't matter what one calls it at that moment, but it has to be different qualities, different strength.
Yes, I can understand somehow, but there's still, I think, for the one is there difference in qualities or difference in conditions at that time? That is the difference I think it should be. So it makes a difference, dosa then. But it should be usually the main characteristic at that time is still the characteristic of dosa.
Yes.
Right?
What about if you don't call it dosa at all? Otherwise one cling to the word again, just want to know. But at that moment when it arises, it's not you. This is the point. To understand that without conditions, it cannot arise at all. So that's the point, to understand that even that reality is not me, it's not I. It cannot belong to anyone, because it arises and falls away in split seconds.
Can I ask what where is sanya come from?
Where does
sanya come from?
Where do you think it comes from?
If I think it's by experience.
by just like the lobha comes by accumulations, just as the dosa comes by accumulations, not by money, but by accumulations. So the sanya also is accumulated. At this moment, we think about tiny tam or think about the drink or the food. And because of sanya, we think in different ways, because at each moment, sanya marks and remembers what is experienced. If it arises with moments of seeing or hearing, it's conditioned by karma, just like the seeing or hearing is. So you can say it comes from karma at that moment, the sanya that arises with the seeing or hearing. But at the moment of thinking with attachment or aversion, it is accumulated just as the attachment or aversion is, remembering what has been seen or heard in the past. That's how we recognize this is a Jan, this is Jonathan. I don't know your name.
Nin.
This is Nin. So now I hear the name for the first time and I think about it, and so maybe later, because of the sanya at this moment, there may be remembering and thinking later about Nin.
And if someone who can draw a very nice picture and it came from his mind, is that called sanya?
So we learn about how complex and variegated the nature of citta is, and each moment of citta is accompanied by sanya, which remembers every little detail. So without citta and sanya, there cannot be any painting or drawing, anything. Each stroke, each, whether blue or red, according to citta and sanya.
Oh, okay.
What is this?
This is a cup.
Is that sanya?
Yes.
How come to have sanya arising?
Because I learned that they call
you the learn, cup. Or the truth is?
I learn, yeah.
Right or wrong? How do you know what you learned is right or wrong?
I don't know what I learned
is
right.
So it depends on the characteristic of reality at that moment.
Yeah.
What is right is according to the nature mm-hmm. of reality at that moment, not because you think that it's sanya.
Okay.
So what is this?
That's a cookie.
Yeah. Is there sanya at that moment? And how can there be sanya of cookie?
Because learned that, actually I learned from
book.
Yeah, learned from the book that this is cookie. That's called cookie.
Yeah, but you see that realities are arising and falling away so rapidly, in succession, one by one. So it's very difficult to find out exactly whether this moment is what. The right understanding is not strong enough to know, to understand, but just to learn that whenever there is sanya, there must be other reality, the seeing or the experiencing of that which appears. If that does not appear, how can there be the sanya of this or that? So sanya arises with moment of seeing.
I see.
Any moment of experiencing an object, sanya is there together. That's why nothing can arise just alone, not single one, but at moment of arising there are many conditions arising together. So sanya is a condition for seeing to arise, and seeing is a condition for sanya to arise. We learn to understand little by little, but there's no one who can do, who can make, who can own, who can have. Realities are realities, absolute realities.
And what about the blind?
Yes, the blind. What is the blind?
The one who cannot see.
Because there is no seeing.
Because
right?
There is no seeing. Yes. So he don't know sanya.
So what is condition for seeing to arise?
Just have an eyes and look at
so the
thing.
So the eye condition seeing.
Yes.
At moment of sleep, mm-hmm. Is there seeing?
No.
Why? There is eye.
Because the eye, and we cannot see anything.
Because it's at that moment, is there citta? You know what citta is?
No.
We talk a lot.
So, seeing now, we've talked a lot about seeing. Seeing is citta. It's a moment of experiencing, a moment of consciousness.
Right.
Hearing is citta. So for the blind, if there's no eye sense, no seeing, but there's hearing and smelling and tasting and touching and thinking, each one accompanied by sanya.
So is there citta now?
Yes.
While one is fast asleep, is there citta?
Because citta is not, is the seeing, hearing combination.
Actually, at every moment of life, there is citta. One citta following another citta. Without citta, then no more, no life. So even first moment of life, there is citta. Last moment of life, there is citta, and non-stop citta in between. So even when there's no seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking, there must be other cheetahs.
Uh-huh.
It sounds like there is citta in life. Is that right?
No, not just in life, in every time, every moment.
Any moment.
Yes.
If there is no citta, can there be life?
Yes. No, if there is no citta, there is
there
no,
life.
No life.
No life. This is the way to understand the word exactly, because we remember the word and the meaning of citta. But if you don't know clearly, we don't know whether this moment is citta or not.
Mm-hmm.
So there are two kinds of realities. They are real, but they are different. One reality arises, but it cannot experience anything at all, like sound, taste, for example, hardness. But if there is no reality which can experience at all, nothing can appear.
Yes.
So what we use the word for that reality which can experience is citta.
Uh-huh.
The faculty, the chief, the head of experiencing. But citta does not arise alone. Mm-hmm. It arises with many mental factors. So sanya is one factor.
I see. Yes.
Okay. Going back to Ajahn's question of a minute ago, is there citta in life?
Yes.
Or we could say citta is life.
Citta is...
No citta, no life.
No citta, no life.
Mm-hmm.
Citta is life. Citta is not life. It's kind of everything. It's make every... I mean, if I understand, citta is not life, but it's in the moment of life and others. Because...
What is there apart from citta in life?
Do you mean that life is one thing and citta is another thing?
No, it's one citta and life is one. It's not different. I mean, it's not For me, citta is not different from life, but in life there is citta. But when someone dies, citta still there.
Person's citta is still there, or your citta? I'm not quite understanding. When someone dies.
Yeah, if I understand, when someone dies, citta is still there, but is maybe in another world.
When someone dies, one moment of citta is death moment, and this is followed by next moment of citta, which is rebirth moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, end of one life, beginning of another. So that means when someone dies, that's the end of that someone, because new life.
It's the end of someone in this world, but
yes,
maybe it's happened in another world.
Jitta doesn't stop. The moment of death jitta is followed by moment of rebirth jitta.
Yes.
If it's your death jitta, Ning's death jitta, it won't be Ning's rebirth jitta, will it? Because in this life, the rebirth jitta was the person we know as you.
Yes.
In the next life, the rebirth jitta will be
others.
That of a different person.
Yes.
But there's continuity, obviously, because the likes and dislikes that have been accumulated are passed on from one moment of consciousness to the next. So they are not lost, they're carried forward.
Mm-hmm. How many jittas are there in one moment?
A lot.
It's a trick question.
A trick question. Just one.
That's it. Why?
Because everything happened to right now is jitta.
One jitta at
one jitta at the moment.
Because when we talk about moment, there must be a moment which is jitta.
Jitta.
With many mental factors.
Many factors.
So jitta arises and falls away by condition, not under anyone's control. It cannot be anyone. So it's there you.
Yeah.
It's there you.
No.
So what are there if it's not you?
It's the... Actually, it's the... It's just natural, it's Dhamma, it's everything which is the, right?
So then where are you?
Where are you? Yeah, we have to think back to our time. No, I'm just, actually, I don't have
No, only different realities arising and falling away from birth to death.
Mm-hmm.
No more in this life, but next life, there are conditions from this life to condition next life.
Next life.
Okay. How long will you be this person?
Well, actually, in this world, like 40-something years, but I think this person may be long, long years, a lot of years.
How long?
I cannot tell because there is no me.
Only when death comes, there's no you anymore.
No
realities can succeed from moment of birth up till now and then go on till death. By then you couldn't remember anything of this life.
Yes.
So just live.
Just live.
According to conditions.
Yes.
With understanding.
Yes.
Thank you. That's why we learn just one word at a time, like moment, or citta, or anger, or attachment. What is it? We start with that so we can continue on, understand more about that. Cannot be taken for self at all. That which is no anything at all, is it real?
Yeah.
Is it a reality?
No, no. And you had a couple more questions?
The other day in Hanoi, there was a discussion about disease. And then Ajahn was explaining to one nun, and somehow it got interrupted. It didn't continue about disease being real or not real. So could we continue, or could Ajahn explain more about this?
Can we say that whatever is real is real? It's a reality.
Yes.
So what is that?
What is that? You mean disease?
Mm-hmm.
Disease is a concept that...
What is real?
What is real? We use terminology or... Okay.
The truth.
What is real? The Dhamma is real. The Namarupa. The...
So, you talk about what a moment ago?
Talk about disease?
When you talk about disease, uh-huh. What do you mean in terms of karma?
Disease is some rupa that's conditioned, lead to the change of rupa that's kind of terminate the life.
Do you have any disease at this moment?
I don't know.
So is it real? If you don't know?
I don't know doesn't mean it's not real, right? Like when I'm in moha, I don't know many things.
So isn't it just a concept?
I'm sorry?
Isn't it that what if it's not real at the present moment,
mm-hmm.
then it's a concept?
Right, that's because I read from book, I heard from Ajahn and peoples, but doesn't mean I already, you know, because for example, the blood, there's a blood bleeding, blood coming out. Okay, it's concept. But it still seems real because I'm the one. The pain is here, not here.
The pain? Pain is real. Pain is real. Experience through body sense.
It's pain real. It Vedana is real.
Mm-hmm. Painful feeling. Painful
yeah,
bodily
painful
feeling.
It's real.
Painful bodily feeling.
Yes.
Yeah, it's real.
Right. Unpleasant bodily.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unpleasant bodily feeling.
Right.
But unpleasant bodily feeling we can associate with the idea of disease, or it might be just hard contact. But painful bodily feeling is painful bodily feeling in terms of dhammas.
Right, but it happened at the same moment when the blood come out. The painful bodily feeling, say the blood coming out yes. for 3 seconds, yeah. the painful feeling still continue for 3 seconds.
Right, but in terms of dhammas, see, when you ask, is disease real, what do you mean? Do you mean, is it a reality? Or do you mean something conventional?
Well, we're talking about dhamma reality, right? So
right.
it's not real. So disease and blood are not real. But the Vedana associated with that is real.
When there's seeing blood, there's uh-huh. visible object. And then thinking about the visible object.
Right.
So it's the same with disease. There's just thinking about different kinds of experience and different things that are observed.
It's something not real which is based on the reality. Is that right?
Well, all our thinking is in a way based on reality, isn't it?
Right.
Because
right.
That's why we have the concept of table.
Yeah.
We would consider that to be based on reality.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there was no seeing a visible object and thinking and memory, there wouldn't be the concept of table.
Just let's talk about one word at a time again. What is the disease?
What is disease? What is disease?
Is there disease?
Is there disease? Yes, there are people die of this cancer, that cancer.
So there is disease. Right. Where is the disease?
The disease, say someone has a liver cancer, then we consider the rupa in that area is not...
Not outside the body.
Not outside the body.
So it's part of the body?
Yes, the rupa is within the body.
Again,
please. I mean the liver is in the body.
The disease.
The disease is in
the
body.
It's inside the body, part of the body,
right.
Not outside.
Mm-hmm.
Not out of the body. So, can we touch disease?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What is touched?
What is touching or what is touched?
What is touched at moment when you think you are touching, looking, seeing, thinking of that as disease? What is touched?
I'm sorry, about disease or about table?
Disease.
Touch. Disease cannot be touched, right?
So where is it?
So it's concept, right?
It's part of the body?
No.
So the part of the body is quite well every day, no disease? Or where is it?
It is thinking.
Pardon? So no one has disease at all if it's just thinking? This is the way to understand Dhamma. Otherwise, one might think that one understands.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, it has to be questioned.
Mm-hmm.
So there can be more understanding of Dhamma as not self.
Mm-hmm.
So now we come to understand what people think about disease. What is it? Is it real?
No. It cannot be touched. That's convinced.
So where is it if it cannot be touched? Can you touch your body?
No.
Touch it.
That's earth element.
Can you touch salt. The body?
Huh?
Can you touch the body?
No.
Touch it.
Oh. Okay.
So the understanding must be so very firm understanding of reality and concept.
Uh-huh.
So in reality, what is the body? What is disease? We can find out from the first question, is disease real? Now we are talking about reality and concept.
Mm-hmm.
So if the question is whether the disease is real or not.
No.
So there's no disease at all.
That's thinking.
So when it's the object of thinking is not real. It's just thought about heaven, hell, and everything as it is and things.
It's just like a heaven, you mean? Like a
head.
Oh, head. It's just like head.
All right. Is that disease we have to find out? If there's not, there's no word disease.
The question is, why do we talk about disease? Yes, disease is a concept, but why do we talk about disease?
Because it has impact, and which we don't like. So we talk about disease. People care about disease.
Usually, the feeling accompanies it, citta, at moment of touching, and it's unpleasant. Very, very bad feeling, very bad pain. We call that disease or pain.
Oh, okay.
So it's only touching something which is unpleasant.
Okay. So that's disease, right? Okay. Thank you.
The unpleasant bodily feeling, though, would arise with some form of touching. Of touching. Can there be unpleasant bodily feeling without a citta that experiences something?
I need to be a citta to experience something, right?
Then what might that be?
You mean the something?
What kind of citta would be experiencing something?
What kind of citta? Vipaka?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's called vipaka,
It would be vipaka citta, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So touching bodily conscience, bodily consciousness? Touching?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because touching implies, for example, contact with the outer body, but it may be in. There's no what we call touching internally. So it's still a painful experience through the body sense, though.
Yes, but because of contact with some rupa. Yes, yeah. That's right, it's touching from external, but inside the body. What we look at, what we think of is inside the body. There is some experiencing of rupa.
Yeah, hardness.
Hardness, yeah.
Or heat.
Yes.
Pressure.
Right. Emotion, yeah.
That's why no matter we call it, for anyone who doesn't know anything about cancer, touching is touching. Hardness is hardness. Pain is pain. So we are afraid of the name, such name like cancer and so forth. But actually it's so very common, only the unpleasant feeling.
Because in conventional terms, there can be disease even where there's no painful feeling. Because we may have a lab test and be told we have cancer, for example, and have had no idea, and there's no symptoms. Asymptomatic disease, right?
Right.
So in terms of dhammas, at that time, it's just what Ajahn mentioned, it's fear of what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Afraid of the name, yeah.
Yeah. But of course, that doesn't mean we don't take remedial action.
Mm.
We don't ignore that information.
Right.
But just in terms of realities, everything is normal.
Mm-hmm. Normal.
No, there's no unpleasant bodily experience. There's no pain or anything, or any sign of illness, disease.
Mm-hmm.
Even if there's no painful bodily feeling, and it's just as a result of the lab test, and one's told it is cancer, and there may be fear and thinking, but the reason the lab test showed it like that is because of different rupas in the body, and there are different groups conditioned in different ways by temperature and nutriment and citta and karma. And so just like each moment of dosa is different, each visible object is different, each group of rupas in the body arising and falling away is different and conditioned in different ways. And some may, because of the way the nature of some rupas conditioned in some ways, there comes to be the name cancer or whatever it is. So the point is that the concept cancer or disease, the reason we have those ideas or concepts is because there are different realities. So whatever we're talking about, whether it's table or chair or disease or cancer, actually there must be realities, otherwise there would be no conditions to think or remember those terms or labels. But the reality at this moment that can be known at such time when one hears, oh, you have cancer, it's just sound that's heard, thinking, fear, and so on.
So, is fear bodily feeling?
No.
Okay. What is it then?
It's fear bodily, it's mental, it's a domanasa.
Dosa mulacitta. Dosa.
Mm-hmm. Dosa mulacitta, yeah.
And the feeling is unpleasant.
Unpleasant, right. Domanasa, right. Yeah.
No self, no one. Just come back to no one at all.
Ajahn, as I read in the sutta, I think, is that all the teachings about Paramattha Dhamma? Or sometimes Buddhas also point out what is good and what is kusala and what is akusala?
Just to know that there is no self at all at any moment.
I mean, just sometime in the sutta, it's not the Buddha did only teach about Paramattha Dhamma, but he also teach about kusala and akusala, right?
Is kusala not a reality, not Dhamma?
Yes, it is. But I think he doesn't mean to talk about it.
So what's the difference between sutta and abhidhamma?
I don't understand your question when you mention about kusala and akusala, because kusala is paramattha dhamma, so why did you...
Because some people, they comment that Ajahn's always touch about paramattha dhamma, but now when they read the sutta, sometimes they understand Buddha is teaching about paramattha dhamma, but sometimes Buddha just teach normal thing like about sila or about what is good to do.
Did he, when he's teaching about sila or what is good to do, did he teach that it should be done with the idea of atta or anatta?
I think it should be with not with the idea about self.
Right. So even when he's talking about generosity or taking care of one's parents or taking responsibility in a lay life like earning money or something like this, yes, is it like anyone else's teaching or is it the Buddha's teaching which should be special or different?
Sorry, you mean...
So if the Buddha is talking about lay people and responsibilities of a lay person taking care of family or whatever, is it the same teaching that someone who is not the Buddha would give, like a Christian would give or anyone? Everyone says, okay, be kind to your neighbor, take care of your family. Is it the same teaching?
I think if we... really understand about the Buddha's teaching, there's difference. But just if we read the sutta normally and without consideration, maybe it is the same.
So should the sutta be read with consideration or understanding, or just read like one reads the newspaper or anything else? Because whatever the Buddha taught about, he taught all dharmas are anatta. So whatever he taught about, he's teaching about dharmas which are anatta. But it just depends on the listener's understanding. Just like when you read the newspaper, whether you read that and think there really are people, there really are different politicians, there really are poor babies, or whether at that moment of reading the newspaper, is there any understanding? Actually, only visible objects seen, only different dharmas, whatever we read about. So it depends on the understanding and consideration.
Yes. And the Buddha teaches in detail what quality of citta is taking care of the parents or observing sila. So it's really the citta, it's the cittasikas. And that's quite different from other religions. It's more precise. And at this moment or that moment is momentary, because each citta falls away immediately, it doesn't stay. So we can read the sutta with this understanding in mind, and then the whole reading of all the suttas becomes quite different when we understand this. It is citta, cetasika, and rupa only.
Yes, I think that's why we have to study the sutta very carefully. Because if we just only read, like we read a story or history about this, maybe it's not right.
That's why people think at first sutta reading is easy, is easier than Abhidhamma. But that is a misunderstanding, because it's really difficult to get the meaning.
Yes. And I think there should already be a context for different sutta, right? There's a context, like when did the Buddha give the teaching? I think there are more things hidden, not only the text.
Yeah. And like each akusala citta is accompanied by ignorance. So that's really something new. We never heard that before, the Buddha's teaching. It is ignorance of realities. Also, right understanding is the condition for more kusala in life, for monks, but also for lay people.
In other words, if one hasn't heard and considered a lot and understood about Paramattha Dharma's absolute realities, impossible to read the suttas without misunderstanding.
So, is it possible to have right understanding of reality right now, as one has learned from the Buddha, without understanding anything? Is it possible?
Without understanding what Buddha taught, mm-hmm. It's not possible.
It's not possible. Mm. No method at all.
I have a note of another of your questions that you asked on our discussion list about ananda and over effort or over exertion.
This is a question maybe almost a month ago on DSG. I was asking question and John Sarah was helping me about ananda. The night before the first council, he was trying very hard to be an arahant.
Who was he?
The Nama was has the loba try to. Who was he?
Who was Ananda?
We're talking about Ananda, right? Mm-hmm. Who was Ananda?
What understanding had been accumulated?
That night he was a Sotapanna, so he has no wrong view.
So is there any doubt?
But to try very hard, what does that mean?
Whatever one does is conditioned.
Right.
No more doubt about I or me or self at all.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So what about the other arahata, Sonakutikana, who walked the whole night?
Who walked the whole night about...
Until his feet was very hurt.
About... I'm not sure. Looking for the Buddha told him the world is within you, that story?
I don't remember. I just remember the factual situation
of a monk who walked up and down the whole night and his feet got cut up.
Oh, I don't know that one. Uh-huh.
Would you like to follow anyone who doesn't have such accumulation?
Oh.
So no matter one does, it depends on the person's accumulation, the mm-hmm. individual's accumulation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Would it be possible for a sotapanna to be an investment trader or insurance manager?
Yes, that's possible.
So just different accumulation. So what we know is no wrong view, no doubt at all. So how one spends a night or how one spends a day is just according to accumulations at that time. But it doesn't mean that someone else should walk up and down all night or like Ananda change postures. But what we know is no wrong view, so no wrong effort at all.
Okay.
From our perspective, it's impossible to conceive how Ananda could make effort without trying in the way we understand it, right?
Right.
That just shows that we don't really appreciate the force of wholesome virya.
And what about the night that you couldn't sleep at all, the whole night? You and Ananda.
I'm sorry, about Ananda, who couldn't sleep?
My question is, what about when one cannot sleep the whole night and or do not sleep the whole night at all?
What kind of chitta? In general, the normal person, usually it's anxiety.
No, I just think about some night one doesn't fall asleep at all. So what's the difference between that night
and dream.
And the other night when one does not sleep but one understands reality the whole night instead? A sotapanna understands reality and he or she doesn't sleep the whole night. And the person who has no understanding of reality at all and does not sleep the whole night, what is different? See? And sotapanna like Ananda the whole night. Think about that. Different from the others.
Mm-hmm. I didn't quite get this one.
Compared if you or I cannot sleep the whole night, compared to Ananda, the one who has accumulated such very high degree of understanding and wisdom, will it be the same?
No.
Will the kusala and the understanding be the same? No. Will the dosa be the same?
No.
So the point is that it's hard to imagine how it is for the one who has so much accumulated understanding at that time. But we know it's not like if we can't sleep and we try to sleep or have a lot of dosa or something like this.
And we might think that it's useless at all to be not able to sleep the whole night. But for the one who understands conditions, it doesn't disturb at all.
Right. Nina was just telling me you didn't sleep last night, right?
And you before.
Right. So last night you didn't sleep, right?
So any understanding? More dosa and forgetfulness.
I often remember when I'm awake in the night, Ajahn once mentioned how actually, any time one's awake, it's opportunity for understanding because there's hearing, there's seeing, there's thinking, there's dosa, just different conditioned dhammas just like now. Yeah. So even it's unpleasant feeling, no matter what arises, there can be understanding any time at all.
Yeah. I thought of something that about the bhavanga citta, that it depends, that's vipaka citta, depends on karma. So, and that's what Ajahn said long ago to me.
No one can make the bhavanga cittas, the deep sleep cittas, arise at all.
But one can be awake in the night wishing for it, which is lopa.